Do you smoke? Do you know someone who does? How about President-elect Barack Obama? Here he is with Tom Brokaw on Sunday's Meet the Press.
The White House is a no-smoking zone. And when you were asked about this recently by Barbara Walters, I read it very carefully. You ducked. Have you stopped smoking?
You know, I have, but what I said was that, you know, there are times where I've fallen off the wagon.
Well, wait a minute. Haven't stopped.
Well, the fair enough. What I would say is that I have done a terrific job under the circumstances of making myself much healthier, and I think that you will not see any violations of these rules in the White House.
Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 6 on this Thursday, December the 11th. We will talk with a guest expert this hour about the latest research in kicking the habit, and we'll welcome your questions for our guest and maybe even your advice for President-elect Barack Obama to keep him from sneaking a cigarette from time to time. Maybe not in the White House. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dr. Douglas Jorenby, Director of Clinical Services at the University of Wisconsin Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, which is part of the UW's School of Medicine and Public Health. Good morning.
Good morning.
So has the president quit smoking, if President-elect quit smoking, if he admits to falling off the wagon once in a while?
Well, I think when he said fair enough was a very gracious way to capture. I mean, what he seemed to be talking about in the interview with Tom Brokaw is incredibly common when people are quitting. It's not like, you know, throwing a light switch and it's either on or off. It's very common when people have set a quit date and had some success in not smoking that they may have a slip or a lapse along the way.
Yeah, how come some can quit for weeks or even months and then still have that urge to have a butt?
Oh, well, the urge is definitely something that's related to some enduring changes that go on. When somebody's been a regular daily smoker, research shows us that there's probably always going to be an underlying vulnerability to that. Even folks who have been quit for years can have just a few cigarettes and very quickly can be back to regular smoking. So that's one of the things that we really stress when we're helping people quit is there's no such thing as a safe cigarette.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about what Obama did right in his plan to quit smoking. He did publicly announce to the world that he was going to do it, for one thing.
Yes, and a lot of people find that that kind of accountability is really important to them, whether you're talking about family members or friends or perhaps coworkers. The program we offer here in Madison has a support group that's associated with it, and a number of folks who make good use of that say that there have been times where they had an urge, you know, left to their own devices, they probably would have smoked, but knowing that they were going to come back and they would have to account to that for the group. Now, admittedly, none of them have the advantage of having the entire press corps looking over their shoulder the way the president-elect does, but
right.
I guess he's making the best use of the resources he has.
Now, apparently, candidate Obama and now President-elect Obama was chewing Nicorette gum, nicotine replacement gum, as his stop smoking aid. That's a successful strategy for many.
Yes, it is. That's obviously a treatment that's been approved by the FDA. In fact, it was the first one that they approved for use in the states. It's one of five different nicotine replacement therapies that are available. Three of those are over-the-counter, so folks don't even have to go in to have a clinic appointment. And then there are also two non-nicotine medicines that the FDA has said are safe and effective to help people quit. So using medicine along with some counseling and support, that's what research shows us is the most effective plan for helping people quit and stay quit.
Now, I'm looking at an article here that says Obama has smoked on and off for 20 years. Oh. At his worst, burning 7 or 8 Marlboros a day. So he wasn't a heavy smoker.
No. Mm-hmm. Generally, that would put him in the moderate smoker category.
Yeah, but that's still not safe.
Well, when it comes to cigarettes, there's very clear indication that's been building since the mid-50s that almost all of the risks associated with it are dose-dependent. So the more cigarettes someone smokes in a day, the more time that they've spent smoking, the more likely it is that they're going to suffer, you know, that whole range of negative health effects that we know, the cardiovascular ones, the various types of cancer, stroke, you know, pulmonary problems like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So it's basically playing the odds.
We will welcome your questions for our guest, Dr. Douglas Jorenby, Director of Clinical Services at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. We're talking about kicking the habit and talking about why it's so hard for many to quit smoking, President-elect Barack Obama among those. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Where do they go? The smoke rings I blow each night.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on this Thursday, December the 11th. It's about 17 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Looking for a good book to give for the holidays or a great read on a cold, snowy winter's evening? After 5, join the conversation as Ben and his guest talk about books to enjoy for the holidays. That's coming up after 5 this afternoon. How about a cigarette with that book? No, how about quitting smoking? That's what we are talking about this hour with Dr. Douglas Jorenby, Director of Clinical Services at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, talking about kicking the habit, as this is a time of year when people do think about that with the first of the year coming up, a common New Year's resolution to quit smoking. And quitting smoking is in the news because President-elect Barack Obama admitted on Meet the Press on Sunday that he does sneak a cigarette from time to time or has fallen off the wagon from time to time in his quest to quit smoking. He promises he's not going to violate any rules in the White House, though, and won't be smoking in the White House. We're talking with our guest about why it's so hard to quit smoking, but what are some of the successful strategies that can be employed in welcoming your questions for him and maybe even your own advice for Barack Obama. Maybe you've quit smoking yourself and have a strategy that you would like to share. And we'll go to the phones in just a moment, Dr. Jorenby, but I was looking at this article saying that Barack Obama has been smoking on and off for 20 years. That means he started in his mid-20s. That's unusual. Most smokers today probably started when they were teenagers. Isn't that right?
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as teenagers or in some cases even children, it's a very small percentage, probably only about 10% of folks who start after the age of 18, and most of them are actually young women who start in their early 20s as a weight control strategy.
Yeah, and the recent data shows that, at least in this country, people are quitting in bigger numbers and that fewer people smoke today than they did before?
Definitely. We've really seen some impressive progress. Unfortunately, it hasn't been evenly distributed. If you look back to say, the early 60s, about the time that the first Surgeon General's report came out, at that point, over half of the men in America were daily smokers. And there's been great improvement there, particularly among people who are educated, some degree of college or more, have kind of quit in droves. And we're at a point now where college graduates, less than 1 in 10, are smoking. That's balanced against the fact that compared to the early 60s, more women smoke. They were a group of consumers that the tobacco industry saw as underserved and made big efforts to market directly to them. Haven't seen the same kind of progress among some racial and ethnic minority groups. That's of concern. The biggest thing, though, has to do with education. people whose formal education stops at high school or people who drop out before they complete high school, their rates of smoking really haven't changed significantly since the early 60s, and that's definitely concerning from a health perspective.
Yeah. And simply because, I mean, it's not like you have to go to college to learn that smoking is dangerous, though.
Well, I would hope not.
But they're not getting, but apparently not getting that message.
Yeah, there's probably a variety of factors, and I don't think we have a real solid handle on it. Certainly some of it has to do with access to health care, you know, knowledge about the most effective ways to quit smoking. Unfortunately, even today in 2008, the most popular way to fulfill that New Year's resolution you were talking about is still for people to try to quit cold turkey. And we know that's pretty spectacularly ineffective.
Yeah.
If people take advantage of counseling, like is available at no cost to anybody in the state of Wisconsin through the Wisconsin Tobacco Quitline, if they use some medicine to help with the withdrawal and craving, they get some support from the people around them, we know they can increase their chances of success very significantly above cold turkey. But only a small fraction of people take advantage of those treatments.
Yeah, that makes sense. And especially there are some new medications, too, that that could be employed. And maybe if you don't have health care money or insurance, you're not going to be able to take advantage of that.
That's true. Mm-hmm. However, since January of this year, the Wisconsin Tobacco Quitline has been making 2 weeks of either nicotine patches, nicotine gum, or nicotine lozenge available at no cost to anyone who's utilizing their Quitline counseling services. So even in challenging economic times, that's something that folks can take advantage of to increase their chances of success.
What is that Quitline number?
It's 1-800-QUIT. Q-U-I-T, now, N-O-W. And as we were saying, that's available to anybody in the state at no cost.
Let's take a couple of calls for you. Sarah in Madison is with us first. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning. I'm wondering, just from personal experience, seeing family members go into rehab and then watching TV shows like Celebrity Rehab, I noticed that smoking is allowed. And I'm really curious if you know why, since it is a drug and it is addictive, why would they allow smoking at rehab? Thank you.
All right. Any idea, Dr. Jornby?
Well, I'm always a little bit reluctant to generalize from television, but back in the mid-90s, when the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations put through a new rule that said healthcare facilities had to be smoke-free. They had two specific exemptions in there. One was facilities that were primarily psychiatric in nature, and then specifically for substance abuse programs. And that was based really more on folklore than data. The tradition among substance abuse recovery had always been that you only make one change at a time, and you're completely focused on sobriety. And I think a lot of people are familiar with the tradition of smoke-filled support group meetings happening all over the country. It turns out that really was folklore. It wasn't based in fact, because a number of institutions decided not to take advantage of that loophole. They thought it made sense from a health perspective to just completely go smoke-free. And as a result of that, we've had more and more data accumulate over the last decade that when facilities, even substance abuse treatment facilities, go completely smoke-free, first and most importantly, it doesn't put people's recovery at risk. They're not more likely to relapse to using alcohol or other drugs of abuse. And there's even some indication that by quitting smoking while they're in rehab, while they're getting their treatment, because of the same consistency that the caller mentioned, they actually do better in staying off both cigarettes and whatever the substance was that brought them in initially.
We had a caller who was waiting but then hung up, who wanted your advice for her to try to encourage her husband or to help her husband to quit smoking. And maybe her husband walked into the room and that's why she hung up. I don't know.
Or maybe I was a little too long-winded.
No. I'm sure that's not it. But I just generally, there's probably a lot of people out there who, you know someone who smokes. And is there anything the non-smoking loved one or a friend can do to help the smoker?
Certainly. Well, there's no magic bullet. Unfortunately, you know, we get calls like that at our center on a regular basis, concerned family members or friends, and there's nothing clinically that will make someone want to quit if they don't want to. Having said that, there are often things that can encourage people, particularly, you know, this day and age, it's hard to find someone who smokes who hasn't tried to quit before, and they're often discouraged because they haven't ultimately been successful. Quitting withdrawal can be uncomfortable for them. You know, to let them know that there are sources of support, whether it's formal treatment programs, support group, whether it's perhaps a medication that they haven't used that reduces withdrawal and craving, those are all viable options. Also, it sounds obvious, but listening to people, that's one thing I've learned over and over again in my career working with folks, is I will often look at someone's history, immediately jump to the conclusion, aha, here's somebody with serious health problems, they're quitting because they're concerned about their health, and then listening to what they have to say, and their health has very little to do with it. They're quitting because they want to be a good role model to their kids or their grandkids. They don't want to expose the people around them to environmental tobacco smoke, or they're concerned about the cost. So really taking the time to listen to that individual, to ask them, what would be the best thing from their perspective about being smoke-free?
Nagging them isn't necessarily a successful strategy?
Pretty counterproductive in most cases, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dave in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. First comment and a question. I always found it amusing when I would go to, when I had people, well, visit people in the hospitals, I'd always see the nurses and the doctors out in that little cubicle just puffing away. And now my question, though, I had the flu the other day, and it almost always happens. I'm about a pack-a-day smoker. I had the flu for about 4 days. I was bedridden. I wasn't working at the time. I was sick. And I didn't smoke, and I didn't really miss it. But when I'm healthy, I want to smoke.
Yeah, so what's going on there? The sore throat is enough to make you want to not smoke, Dr. Jornby?
Absolutely. I mean, what Dave is describing is a very common phenomenon. A lot of people, the only time they quit is when they feel too sick to do it. Once they start to recover, unfortunately, the cravings come back, and they're in their usual routine. They're around things that trigger desires for cigarettes, and that can often be a good time to put into place some of the other things we've been talking about to help people succeed, to get serious about that. And it also aids with recovery. I'm really glad to hear he's feeling better. It's a very common scenario, especially this time of the year. People get upper respiratory infections, flu, and a lot of times that gets promoted to bronchitis or even pneumonia when they're smoking, especially if they're smoking heavily.
Let me hold you there. We will talk more about how to kick the habit, how to quit smoking, with Dr. Douglas Jornby, who is with the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. And we welcome your questions, maybe even your advice, for President-elect Barack Obama, who has admitted that he hasn't completely quit. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 6:36 on this Thursday, December the 11th. We are talking with a guest expert this hour about the latest research in kicking the habit. We are welcoming your questions for advice on how to quit smoking. As the New Year's is coming upon us, a common New Year's resolution is to quit smoking, but also talking about this because President-elect Barack Obama admitted on Meet the Press last Sunday that he sneaks a cigarette from time to time. He hasn't completely quit. We wonder if you have some advice for President-elect Obama in his quest to quit smoking. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Welcoming your questions for our guest, Dr. Douglas Jorenby, Director of Clinical Services at the University of Wisconsin Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, which is part of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And before we go back to the phones, Dr. Jorenby, we did get an email from Craig in Viroqua saying that he thinks it's fine that Barack Obama occasionally sneaks a cigarette. Might be good for his nerves, he says. There's no real danger just as long as he's not lighting up regularly. What is your response to that?
Well, as we were talking about before the news break there, most of the risks associated with smoking in terms of health are dose dependent. So I would agree with the email in the sense that certainly a cigarette now and then is less of a health risk than someone who's smoking on a daily basis. However, given a history of being a regular smoker, having a cigarette now and then really increases the chance that somebody's going to go back to smoking on a regular basis, and that would be the primary concern.
Yeah. What are the are there new drugs or medications on the market that that might help people who are trying to quit smoking?
Well, I guess it depends on your definition of new. The one that was most recently approved by the FDA a little bit over a year and a half ago is a non-nicotine treatment, varenicline, which is interesting because it works in a slightly different way than anything else that they've approved to help people quit. It has what are called agonist effects, effects like nicotine. So in the same sense that the nicotine patch or the nicotine gum relieves craving and withdrawal. But at the same time, by blocking some kinds of nicotine receptor subtypes, it also reduces a lot of the pleasurable, the rewarding effects of smoking. And that seems to be helpful for some folks in allowing them to quit where they haven't succeeded with other medicines.
Is that different than Zyban?
Yes. Zyban was the first non-nicotine treatment that the FDA approved in the States. That is an atypical antidepressant, and we believe part of the reason that it is effective in helping people quit smoking is it reduces the reuptake of dopamine. And that sounds a little bit odd because that's a different chemical than nicotine. But the way nicotine works in people who smoke is it causes the release of dopamine in a reward pathway in the brain called the mesolimbic dopamine system. When somebody quits cold turkey, that system doesn't just go back to its pre-smoking level. It becomes less active than normal, and for a lot of people, they experience that as feeling sad, feeling like they've lost their best friend, and that's medicine seems to buffer to help some of those symptoms when people are quitting.
So now if somebody is a smoker and wants to, you know, maybe they've already tried, you know, nicotine gum in the patch and that sort of thing, and they want something more, is it that a doctor will say, okay, you know, how do you decide whether you do Zyban or this other drug? And then the Chantix, is that what it's called?
That's the brand name for it, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, yep. Partly it's a matter of checking to make sure that there isn't a contraindication for a given person, a reason that they shouldn't be using that medicine for safety reasons. But then a lot of it is simply consultation between the person who's wanting to quit and their healthcare provider to see if that's appealing, what their experience has been in the past. A lot of people, as you say, have used nicotine patches, used nicotine gum, not been successful. Sometimes that's because they weren't used the way they're recommended, the way they're most effective. Other times that may not be the best treatment for them, and it makes a lot of sense to try something else.
Mary Lou in St. Francis has a question on this. Hi, Mary Lou, you're on the air.
Hi. I believe your guest was talking about the drug Chantix, and my question or comment is the higher incidence of depression and feelings or thoughts of suicide. And in that, the primary care physicians aren't very good at diagnosing depression, and I'm wondering if this is really a drug that should be on the market.
Is there some side effects of depression or suicidal thoughts with Chantix, Dr. Jornby?
That was something that the FDA expressed some concern about early in this year, and it was unusual given that those did not show up in the studies that were done prior to approval. So the FDA had approved it, and then a number of months later came back and said, there have been some data that have come out since the drug was released into the general market that have caused some concern. I've not seen the basis for that, so it's a little bit hard to extrapolate. Certainly those are concerning symptoms, and the FDA's recommendation was that healthcare providers who are prescribing this follow up carefully with patients who are using it. And in terms of helping someone quit smoking, that's always a good idea, no matter what medicine they're using or if they're using none at all. We know the more contact, the more counseling and support people get when they're quitting, the more likely they are to be successful.
Thank you, Mary Lou. Next we go to Patty in Jackson. Hi, Patty, you're on the air.
Hello, I am the loved one of someone who is in the process of trying to quit smoking. I quit years ago. We were just having a discussion last night, and he was telling me that he read something years ago that the human body naturally has nicotine in it, whether you've ever smoked or not. And I found that really hard to believe.
I've also heard that eggplant contains a nicotine-like substance, but what about that, Dr. Jornby?
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate the caller on quitting herself a long time ago. That's great, and I'm glad her husband is doing it as well. The human body doesn't manufacture nicotine, but it does have receptors on neurons throughout the body that nicotine locks into very well. They're a subtype of cholinergic receptor, so that's part of the reason that we seem to be very prone to getting hooked on the substance. From what we can tell from evolutionary botany, it appears that plants started producing nicotine primarily as a defense against insects. You and your caller may well be aware nicotine is used as an insecticide. It's pretty effective in killing bugs, and unfortunately with people it is also effective. It just takes longer at the doses that we use.
I had always heard, Dr. Jornby, that the nicotine itself wasn't the killer, so to speak, in cigarettes. It was all the, everything else.
Right. It's what keeps you coming back for exposure to the tar, the carcinogens, the carbon monoxide, particularly that come with smoking. But it definitely seems to be the substance in tobacco that keeps people coming back for the next dose and the next dose.
Yeah. And so having some nicotine in your body through plant sources or anything else isn't necessarily going to hurt you.
No, not from eggplant or tomatoes or some of the other substances. It's really concentrated in the tobacco plant as a defense against bugs. But it is one of those things that makes you stop and think that, we're voluntarily taking in something that plants use to keep insects from eating them.
And you could use one of these nicotine inhalers and puff on nicotine and not have all the other carbon monoxide.
Right, and that's exactly the idea behind all the nicotine replacement therapies, as it became clear to folks on the science side that nicotine was what was keeping people coming back for the next dose. The thought was, is there a way we can deliver that to reduce withdrawal and craving without exposing people to carbon monoxide and tar and carcinogens? And the inhaler, the patch, the gum, the lozenge, and the nasal spray are all different answers to that question.
We are answering your questions about how to quit smoking, or maybe you have a loved one who you want to encourage in his or her effort to quit smoking. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Even President-elect Barack Obama has recently admitted he still sneaks a cigarette from time to time. Why is it so hard for some to kick the habit? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Everything's got to stop while they have that cigarette.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 11th. Coming up after 7, we will ask our guest if Illinois is the most corrupt state in the country. We'll talk about the corruption scandal that is affecting Illinois and the whole country, for that matter, coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about kicking the habit, quitting smoking, welcoming your questions for our guest expert who helps a lot of people to quit smoking. Dr. Douglas Jorenby is Director of Clinical Services at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Bob in Germantown. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm curious as to what's happened to the hypnosis programs. I have a brother-in-law that in the early 80s was a classic three-pack-a-day smoker, and his whole family was a smoking family. And his wife encouraged him to go to a hypnosis clinic. And, I mean, after his first or second time that he went, he's never smoked another cigarette in his life. And I'm wondering why we don't hear too much of that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jorenby?
Well, I'm really glad that was successful for the caller's family member. That's exceptional rather than the rule. In May of this year, the U.S. Public Health Service released a clinical practice guideline called Treating Tobacco Use and Dependence. My colleague, Dr. Mike Fiore, who runs the Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention, was the chair of the panel that reviewed the last 30 years of the literature, and they found that there was not scientific evidence to support hypnosis as an effective way to help people quit smoking. So on an individual basis, like the caller was talking about, I definitely have known people over the years that it worked for, but over groups of folks who smoke, there's not good evidence that it's an effective treatment.
You have, Dr. Jorenby, done some research on women and smoking, or women quitting smoking. Is it a lot different for men and women?
Not in an overwhelming sense, but there are some interesting aspects of that. It appears that nicotine replacement may not be as effective for women as non-nicotine treatments like bupropion, the antidepressant that we were talking about earlier. It also appears that social support may be more important for women, and certainly in our experience, women who are quitting tend to make more use of support resources like counseling or group support.
Well, I wasn't going to be admitting this, but I will. You know, I'm like Mark Twain, and quitting smoking is easy. I've done it many times, but it's not so easy. I fall off the wagon quite a bit. But one of the things that I have noticed, and I've talked to other women, is the weight gain is concerning to women, isn't it, when you quit smoking?
Yeah, although interestingly, in recent years, there have been more men that have been willing to admit that that's a concern for them, too. So I don't know if that's progress or not, but
yeah.
It definitely is an issue, and the average person who quits is going to gain somewhere between 5 to 10 pounds in the short term. The good news is that over a longer period, say 6 to 12 months, that weight tends to go back down again, particularly as people get more active, as their heart and lungs recover. But, you know, in the short term, that's definitely a concern, and it's not one that we have a particularly good answer for in terms of treatment right now.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm above average because I did more than that.
Okay.
Joan in Hubertus is with us. Hi, Joan, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a nurse and a certified health coach, and I have a son with Tourette's syndrome. He's now 22. He never used these when he was younger, but they have found that nicotine patches actually stop some Tourette's from ticking. And I think there's a dopamine connection there with the patches in their brains. But then at age 18, my son took up smoking, and I said, no, it's going to be very hard for you to quit. And he smoked now for 4 years, and he has no tics since he started smoking. So I think there's something with the brain receptors, and I didn't catch the beginning part of your
Oh, isn't that interesting? So nicotine stops.
If you're aware of that,
are you aware of that, Dr. Jorindy?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's been a lot of interest, particularly since therapeutic ways to deliver nicotine became available. And I agree with the caller. Tourette's definitely does seem to respond to that in some cases. There's been interest in it in treatment of perhaps some types of dementia, some gastrointestinal disorders. So as we were talking about earlier, there are receptors for nicotine throughout the body. But what we're focused on is, are there ways to provide that to people without all the health consequences that come with smoking?
Interesting. Thank you, Joan, for calling. Lois in Minong is with us now. Hi, Lois.
Yes, good morning. This is a real interesting conversation because I've been battling. I was a hardcore smoker since I've been 16. I'm 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband in 1995 had a massive heart attack. He had quit smoking for quite a few years and had started up again, and he had to go hardcore. It was very, very hard on him. Myself, I have done the patch work, but unfortunately I could only wear it for 2 weeks because I got a terrible reaction to the adhesive.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped smoking for almost 2 years, went back on, tried the lozenge, didn't work, tried the patch again, unfortunately couldn't even wear it a week, and then I tried Shantix first. And I was on that for 4 weeks, and I stopped for a year and a half.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
I went back again, and then I tried the Shantix again, and every time I've used the Shantix, I've had different results. I mean, I'll stop smoking eventually, but there's still that urge. So my doctor put me on a combination this last time, and that was about 9 weeks ago, Shantix and Zyban, because Zyban was one of the first chemical deterrents for smoking that they came out with, I think, and the combination really helped me.
Really? So have you heard of that before, Dr. Jornby, having both a combination of Zyban and Chantix?
Yeah, it's not a combination that the FDA has approved, but it definitely gets used out there in the real world, and it makes some sense since both of those non-nicotine medications are working through slightly different routes. The major concern with that is potential side effects, and it sounds like Lois hasn't been suffering from those, so that's great. I'm glad to hear that. Both of those medicines have a tendency to disrupt people's sleep, so sometimes that can be a roadblock because it's hard to do much of anything, less quit smoking, if you're not sleeping well. But,
Lois, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's amazing. You have quit several times for even a year at a time or more. Yeah.
Yes.
Congratulations. That's a major accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
The factor that caused me to go back to smoking was we were sitting around a campfire having a couple of drinks, and a gal friend was smoking. And I says, let me try that. It only took once. It only took once.
Yeah.
So,
and that's just what we were talking about earlier in the program, that when you've been a regular smoker, that is a huge risk factor. And is there a lesson that you've taken away from that?
Absolutely. Never will I ever. Because this last time was the hardest time. I have to honestly admit it was the hardest time in my life to stop smoking. The first time with the patch, no problem. Had I stayed, faithful to the program, I would have been fine, but I didn't. I was a backslider.
Yeah. Well, Lois, congratulations, and how long has it been now on your new regime?
Yes, absolutely.
How long has it been now?
It's been 10 weeks now. This is going on the 10th week for me.
All right, well, good luck to you, and thanks for calling. Yeah, we have one more quick email. Doug in Bloomer says he goes through 5 tins of chew every 2 weeks and would like to quit. Any advice for him?
That's a case where there's not as much research data out there for people who are smokeless tobacco users. They certainly seem to have the same kind of withdrawal experience that smokers do, which suggests that the medications that we use to help people quit smoking may be effective. Actually, one of the few treatments that's shown very good results is an internet-based program to help people that chew. So that's something that he might want to look into if he's thinking seriously about quitting the chew for the new year.
Yeah, so if he searches for quitting chew, he might get an internet. He might find the internet-based program or talk to his physician.
Right, exactly, and that provides some support and encouragement for people who are going through that process.
Well, we are out of time for now. You want to give us the quit line number once again for those who maybe want to get some more information on quitting?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's toll-free anywhere in Wisconsin, 1-800-QUIT, Q-U-I-T, NOW, N-O-W, and they'll provide individual phone counseling from 7 in the morning until 11 o'clock at night every day of the week, and can provide up to 2 weeks of nicotine patch, gum, or lozenge at no cost. So it's a wonderful resource for people who are thinking seriously about quitting.
Thank you very much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Douglas Jornby with the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Thanks to Cynthia Schuster and Bill Martins for producing the hour. This is the Ideas Network.